Moncrief on News Talk.
Look, Doctor, my boyfriend and I have some issues, and the whole thing blew up, and I was just so upset and immature and stupid. I'm just stupid. This has been a massive wake-up call, and I will never, ever, ever, ever do coke or drink straight gin ever again. Ever.
Rachel, you need support. You have a very serious problem.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You won't think she's in Grey's Anatomy or something. The drama.
That's the Walsh sisters. It started last night on RT1, 9:35 every Sunday. Hence, of course, you can also catch up on the RT player. James Dempsey is with us once again. Afternoon, James.
Afternoon.
How many novels is this? Like, this is a series of Marion Keyes novels truncated into one series.
My understanding is it's only two novels, of them. But what I thought was remarkable is that Marion Keyes, who is a global bestseller, has sold an estimated something, 30 million novels worldwide. And this is actually the fourth adaptation of her work ever, and the first one.
It's always puzzled me that
since 2004, when a French movie was made an adaptation of one of her books. So that kind of struck me as very odd, despite the fact that she's like this perennial bestseller, very prolific in her output, and people love her. So why wouldn't somebody spin that into silver or small screen or silver screen gold? Now here, I would say I'm not quite getting silver screen or small screen gold, but maybe bronze for the moment, with potential, right?
Because we only have one episode
exactly.
To go on.
Only one was released ahead of time for any reviewer to see. So any review you've read, that's all they've seen. And it ended with a big cliffhanger, shall we say, of what might be coming down the pipeline. And all in, I thought lots of it was, worked very well for me. I thought the five sisters were all very, very engaging in their relationship. I thought they felt like a family in their kind of bickering with each other. Best known amongst them is probably Louise Harland, who is late of Derry Girls. But we heard in the clip there Caroline Menton as Rachel from the Rachel's Holiday book. She is probably best known for a small role in an Irish horror film called Oddity, which was very, very well reviewed. And if you like things that go spooky as we get into October, is well worth seeking out. I was delighted to see Mairead Tyers of Extraordinary, which Disney has now cancelled. So we're not getting a third season of The Cat Whose Name I Will Not Mention. But but I was delighted to see her in this as well, even though her role is probably the smallest of the five sisters. She plays basically the one who still lives at home. And all in, we get these five, let's say, millennial sisters, maybe one Gen Z, in Dublin, in leafy middle class life. And the drama comes from the various antics going on in their life. So the aforementioned Rachel has got addiction issues. Louisa is engaged to British actor Samuel Anderson, doing the worst American accent I have ever heard on screen. Though it seems like their relationship is a bit unclear of how deep she wants to get into it. And he's got some skeletons in his closet as well. Stephanie Prisoner, who also adapts this along with Keffi Chadwick, not someone I was too familiar with, but an appropriately named person to have adapted Rivals for Disney Plus recently. Stephanie Prisoner plays Maggie, who is the one trying to get pregnant. And that, of course, means if somebody is trying to get pregnant on TV, it's not going to happen, right?
Yeah, of course not.
But all in, I thought the easy charm, particularly between Anna and Rachel, Louisa Harland and Caroline Menton, was excellent. Their drama was really fun and interesting and well acted. I thought it was totally believable that, Anna would go to bat for Rachel all this time, despite her being a total, mess and difficult person to be with. Things that didn't quite work for me were, this really naff dancing scene in a bar to Samantha Mumba's seminal hit, Always Come Back to Your Love, including, a routine that they're doing for a song that came out in 2000. It felt like incredibly dated and really, really going nowhere. The men in their lives, who are creating as much problems as providing solutions, are equally problematic and not particularly well developed. And it all, a lot of the drama then is sort of spun out from their relationship to their mother, Carrie Crowley, who is best known as Mammy Walsh, who is playing this sort of patrician matriarch who is just really unhappy with everything, but, you know, tightly wound and doesn't really get a lot to do in that. But again, it has only been one episode, right?
Because it's five sisters.
Yes, five sisters.
So, like, in an episode that's, you know, screen time far less than an hour, is there even time to go other than she's got this problem, she's got this problem, she's got this problem, here they are drunk, good luck.
Like, if we compare this to, let's say, the other Irish drama about a group of sisters, right, that was on Apple TV, Bad Sisters.
Yeah.
Obviously, the fundamental difference between the two is that also had, is it four sisters there rather than five? But they had a common bond.
Yes,
right?
It was one plot.
It was one plot upon which each of their individual plots were worked, whereas this is five very different plots meshed together. And because of that, I'm guessing each sister is probably going to get a starring role in one episode, shall we say, and then fade into the back for the rest. This episode was definitely about establishing who they all are and really putting, we'll say, Anna and Rachel to the forefront. And I suppose they will probably be the leads for the entire series. But the other sisters will get their moment to shine, I have no doubt. But yeah, all in, like, I thought the dialogue was funny. I thought it was charming. I thought Dublin looked great. I thought, I've never been to a nightclub like anything I've seen on the screen here. And more's the pity. But all in, I just thought, like, it was grand. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not a car crash by any means, no pun intended. And also not a triumph either. Just somewhere kind of down the middle, but you know, I'll be tuning in next week to see.
Okay, fair enough. And Aidan Quinn is the father in this. What's he like?
I mean,
what's his accent like?
It's okay again, right? Like, because he's like American, more so, like he's Irish American in some regard. I don't really know what his everyday parlance
is. But he's
like
Irish American.
Yeah, he is Irish American.
So is he speaking with an American accent?
No, he's speaking with a leafy South Dublin accent. Now, I will say there's a bit of inconsistency because, although I love Mairead Tyres, her Cork accent does sort of eke its way through, despite the family being supposed to be from some part of South Dublin.
Well, they'll probably be, she was at boarding school there or something. Just to explain that later on. So, but there was enough of a cliffhanger to go, I'm definitely going to tune in next
week. Definitely, yeah. I think it was a positive start, a totally fine, like, you know, I don't want to give it my thumbs up of approval yet, because I just haven't seen enough to be able to do that.
Yeah.
But as an introductory episode to this world, yeah, I thought it had like space to grow.
Yeah. And it's all sent in the same time period as that, because I think there's something in the books that there are different time periods.
Well, Rachel's Holiday, which is one of the few Marion Keyes books I've read, is, I think it was written in the 90s. So it's very much like, I listened to it recently, on an audiobook, and it is very much a product of the 90s in terms of its cultural references and its exploration of like party culture and even eating disorders and all the various people that Rachel meets while she's in rehab, which is where we know the story is going. If anyone has seen the first episode, that's not a spoiler. But all in, I think it has been moved up to 2025. And
apart from the Samantha Mumba chat.
Apart from a 2000 hit from Samantha Mumba.
Yes. Okay, well, maybe it's just been re-released. Right, our second Irish Connected show, House of Guinness. You can stream all of season one now on Netflix. Here's a clip.
I would buy it from you. The whole thing.
With what?
With an agreement. Maybe 30% of the profits.
For doing nothing.
For representing our interests in Parliament. Father was only ill for a few days. For all this happened in such a brief space of time. Death comes to us all.
And the brewery comes to me.
But you sell it to me.
Against our father's wishes.
In heaven, he'll find peace.
Right, that's House of Guinness. Is this kind of a Bridgerton jobby where it's kind of like suddenly there's this jarring contemporary music and that kind of stuff?
Oh, well, 100% of that, right?
Yeah.
So the main winners of this show are, one, the Guinness Storehouse, which will, you know, gets undoubtedly
absolutely
a massive bump in tourism if this gains any kind of global traction. And it seems to be, you know, a big hit worldwide and on all the kind of talk show circuits, all of the actors are being paraded. So Netflix is definitely putting power behind this. It is then all full of contemporary music. So I've no doubt that like a playlist has been put together, and many Irish bands who you would know, Fontaines DC, Kneecap, Cardinals, The Stunning, Lisa O'Neill, they all will, you know, hopefully see some bounce from it as well.
Okay, nice.
Now, on the other hand, it's almost entirely shot in the UK.
Okay.
So if you're looking at it, you know, the exterior shots of Dublin and going, I don't recognise that building, and I think I would by now. Yeah, there's a reason for
what
that.
What time period is it set in?
So it's, it opens in the 1860s when one of the Guinness scions has, you know, has met his untimely death, and in his will he is passing on the brewery to one of his four children. Now, they are played by Anthony Boyle, who is from Belfast. He would probably be best known for Say Nothing or The Plot Against America, which he was a fantastic in. He was the younger brother in that. But, you know, and doing a kind of Anglo-Irishized accent because he's spent 5 years.
Okay, which is kind of what they'd have.
Yeah, exactly. Then we have Louis Partridge. He is Edward Guinness, the youngest brother. We have Emily Fairs, a Liverpudlian, as Anne Plunkett. And then the only, we'll say, Southern Irish amongst them is Fionn O'Shea as Benjamin Guinness, who is the drunkard. And finally, we get James Norton, then, who you would know from many things, as Sean Rafferty, also doing his best kind of dub accent. He's kind of the fixer muscle of the whole thing. Now, all in, for me, like, not to be like so, you know, laying on the Guinness puns here, but it took a while for it to settle, right? Yeah. As in, they are trying to decide, trying to decide who exactly this story is about. Because in the first episode, those four children sort of get equal billing, and I thought that we're going to spend a succession style show, you know, watching each four of them do their various different things and see what happens. But once the episode two comes along and the will is read out, well, two of them get very much sidelined and don't get to do an awful lot for the rest of the
show. Spoiler alert, is not Arthur.
but it is especially, that's particularly true of Fionn O'Shea as Benjamin Guinness, who basically gets to do almost nothing for the remainder of the season. And I don't know why on earth you would bring on actress Elizabeth Diane as Lady Henrietta, who is probably better known for her role in Andor as Cleo, the assistant to the, you know, the really fantastic role in that show, where she gets basically two scenes in this whole thing. Now, we into the show then comes a bunch of Irish character actors all playing very Irish stereotypical stuff. I mean, it's kind of like they asked ChatGPT to write like an Irish heroine in the Irish Republican Brotherhood, and then they pressed enter, and that's where we get Niamh McCormack's Ellen Cochrane, who is this red-haired, blue-eyed beauty who will shoot you and love you in equal measure.
Yeah.
Now, all in, I have to admit, it really grew on me. But I was so surprised because it comes obviously from Stephen Knight. He is best known for Peaky Blinders, which is a show I tried many times to watch and it just never really grabbed me, ever. I'm not interested in that kind of, you know, macho machismo style slash, you know, what it has done for the cloth hat industry.
Yeah.
But I'm always surprised when I read that he also created Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. So he contains multitudes, and I'm willing to give him a go. What I liked about it was it also wasn't slow on the plot. I mean, it spans a number of years within the first season of the show. It ends on a completely and utterly made up apocryphal attempt at someone's life that never happened. But like, I found it funny when it was meant to be funny, charming when it was meant to be charming. It was silly. I was just sort of, you know what, I watched it on a plane and it was like the perfect place. Like, as in the right circumstances, I thought it was absolutely silly but fun.
Yeah. It sounds like it's aimed at an American audience
I think, like, if you are coming at this looking for Irish historical verisimilitude, I'd say pour yourself another pint of Guinness, because you're not going to get it here and you should find another way to enjoy this show. It is going for that kind of like winky, bawdy, violent, occasionally ultra violent, but mostly quick-witted back dealings of the company and trying to break into America and all that kind of stuff. And that kind of worked fine. Like, I thought it was fine.
Yeah. It's a bit like a lot of these things where, if it's a drama about a company that makes something, you rarely see the thing it makes. True. Like, do people drink Guinness in this?
People occasionally drink Guinness in it, yes. Most of the Guinness drinking involves a subplot trying to break into the US market, where we have Jack Gleeson, late of Game of Thrones, playing the, you know, illegitimate son, but unlikely named Byron Hedges, who is leading the charge to break the US market. And that seems to be where most of the Guinness is being sent in the show, and also where they're trying to pick up viewers.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. That explains that. Right, our final show is the winner of best title for a TV show anyway, Nine Bodies in a Mexican Morgue. It's on Saturdays at 9:25 on BBC One. Here's a clip.
We didn't know anything about him, Tavio. He was a pilot, but was he married? Did he have kids? The stewardess? She died too. We didn't even know her name.
We don't know anything about any of us.
Poor bastard. Falls out of the sky, survives the plane crash, and now this. But what do we do with him?
We've got to bury him. We have to bury both of them.
Forget that. In this heat?
He's right. We'll take them with us.
Yeah. If we ever get out of here.
There you go. That's Nine Bodies in a Mexican Morgue. And if you ever suspected that Siobhan McSweeney is actually being cloned in a lab and they're just renting out versions of her, she's in this as well.
Yeah, in case you need a hit after The Traitors, and you need a bit of Siobhan, and you wanted to see her playing a MAGA supporting motel running, gun shooting huntress in the jungle, having survived a plane crash, then this is just what you're looking for.
Okay.
So this comes from Anthony Horowitz, who is a very well-known English writer, has written many novels for young adults and adults, and probably best known for adapting lots of Agatha Christie for Poirot, and then his own mystery show Foyle's War, which was on in the early 2010s. And here he's very loosely adapting And Then They Were None, and then There Were None by Agatha Christie. So what we get here is a group of Americans mostly, and one Brit, all on a plane going from Guatemala to Houston when it crashes over this massive rainforest jungle in Mexico, and they are left all 10 of them having survived this plane crash, but discovering that each morning when they wake up, someone else amongst the group has been killed off one by one by one by one by one. And who else could it be but the people in the group? Mm. It's actually very traitors.
Yeah, it is, really, isn't it? Yeah.
So all in, the thing that's worth noting here is that this was originally supposed to be made for Quibi, the very short-lived Quick Bites was what Quibi was standing for. Quick Bites, a streaming service where episodes were going to be only sort of 5 to 10 minutes long. And you can tell that because there's these big, big, big reveals constantly every 5 to 10 minutes within the episodes that would stand as sort of, plot thickening and certainly tantalizing things that might keep you on a streaming service that no longer exists. It was made for MGM Plus then, and the BBC has brought it to our shores. And it is, again, fine. It is silly, right? I mean, it's obviously designed in such a way to be tantalizing and silly and exciting and with lots of surprises to keep you hooked. But that gets a bit grating after a while. But all in, the cast, which includes as the lead, Eric McCormack, best known for Will and Grace, Siobhan McSweeney, as I said, the Icelandic actor Ólafur Darri Ólafsson, who you would know to see, I'm telling you, he was in, he pops up in lots of things. He plays Siobhan's husband, Travis. They do their best South American and Southern American, I guess I should say, accents, and MAGA supporting politics throughout the show. And it's fun to see each person get off one by one by one. And I will say, I mainlined it to get to the reveal of who exactly was going to do this. And by the time you do that in episode 6, which is probably one episode more than they needed to go, it's fine again. It's a show that is silly and does not take itself too seriously. It's grounded by good performances amongst its cast. Does it look like it's shot on a soundstage rather than the jungle? Definitely. But does it kind of have enough charm to keep me going? Yeah, it does.
Yeah, but when it got to the end and the big reveal, did you go, oh my God, I didn't see that? Or did you go,
yeah. No, I was like, oh my, new is that. Yeah.
Oh gosh. Someone says, when an Irish adaptation actually makes it to the screen, particularly when it's Marion Keyes, you'd expect it to be a great watch. It all seemed a bit forced, though. Someone else says, thought The Walsh Sisters was crap. House of Guinness, fabulous. Apparently, James Norton called House of Guinness the crown with beer. And someone else is texting in to say, Samantha Mumba is timeless. Okay, sorry. Thank you for your correction on that. Those three shows are The Walsh Sisters. You can catch up in the RTE Player or watch live every Sunday night at 9:35 on RTE1. House of Guinness, you can stream all of season 1 now on Netflix. And Nine Bodies in a Mexican Morgue, That's on Saturdays, 9:25 on BBC One. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.